we had a question which was going to be a deep involved question, so why don't you ask the question?
Yeah, I would like to ask it because at 11 o'clock I need to move, and as I say that, before the architectural side was thinking of a complicated structure 500 years ago, and it came to the new era of philosophy where they want to make it complex in order to make the society adapt the architecture. And make us, the users, have a system or a design pattern that we move through it, enjoy it, and go out. And now from the perspective of the service company, which one is the most profitable if we think it in a business term? To design it as a mastermind it in a way that is complex, let's call it for the next 30 years, or complicated. Because complicated, in one hand, may bring like how they build this processor, because when you look at a processor, they have built it actually from the urban planet, how the gates are open and closed, and basically an infrastructure in a very mini place. So what is the best way to make it complex or a complex, complicated combined? In terms, if you take it in this way, that arrivals don't find it easily that what is your technique in this way.
Yeah, okay. So complex and complicated, I just introduced this idea to you today, so it'll take some time for people to absorb the idea. And we can think about examples where there are things that are designed, and it's not that one is better than the other, it's that it's a choice you make. So just thinking, as you were talking, what's an example of complicated and complex? So when you buy furniture, you can buy it as a complex, and so you want to buy a chair, you can buy the chair as a chair. If you go to IKEA, it's complicated. IKEA gives you the parts to build the chair. And so if part of the chair breaks, you can actually usually go back to IKEA and get one part. If you bought the chair as a whole thing, as a complex, and you have to fix the chair, probably you need to go to a furniture maker and have them repair, because you can't just go to pick up one part. You would not have all that. So the challenge from the systems perspective is complex is more efficient, complicated is more sustainable. This is like really special to class. JP has had this whipped into so many times because. So, complex is more efficient. Complicated is more sustainable.
Dave, you should say also integrated versus modular, or is that different?
Modular has a few issues because, so you can't have complicated without having modular. And now it's really esoteric because the issue with modules is, are they single purpose modules, single function modules, or multi-function modules? And this is really technical. Again, let me go to software, because when you design software, you can design it as single function or multi-function. The best example that I think about that was Joel Spolsky was speaking about when the spreadsheet was invented. Everyone thinks about Lotus 1-2-3 and Excel, these sorts of things. When the spreadsheet was invented, the original idea was it is only for financials, and people use spreadsheets only for adding up figures and doing budgets and that sort of thing, projections. But then when they actually stopped and thought about it, there's a more general thing, which is a spreadsheet. So why do you have a financial planning tool that's just that? So A spreadsheet is something that can be used multiple functions. And we're used to office suites. You can take and insert a spreadsheet into a document. So that is a multi-function modular approach. Another way would be just design a specialized tool that does what a spreadsheet does. You plug that in. And then you get into, it's a complicated complex, whether it's multi-function or single function. So let me leave that one. Go back to this one. And this comes out of hierarchy theory about complex versus sustainable. And the example I usually say is, I come from the computer world, a mainframe computer is a complex system. A network of computers is a complicated system. Why do you want a mainframe system? A mainframe system is good because you actually only need a few operators. It's more efficient on power, right? It centralizes everything. When you talk about complex systems, they tend to be integrated, they tend to be centralized, monolithic sorts of things. And you can't take it apart. When you have a network of computers, If one part of the network or one computer fails, the other computers still work. So the problem with having a network of computers, firstly, you can have all different computers. So that means more people are involved in trying to understand the whole network. Also, it consumes more power because everyone has their own computer and they're all on, but not everyone is using it. While you sleep, if your computer is on, you're not really using it, it consumes power. But if it was a mainframe, then someone in Tokyo could be using the computer while you're sleeping. So there's a trade-off here, and it's a choice. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So we're going to try doing a pattern, and this is really the technical part. And here's the problem with writing patterns. I told you, Alexander's team took 10 years to write patterns. I feel like I'm back in 1967 with him starting this thing up. So we are going to write some really bad patterns together. And we're going to try to do this. I need a couple of volunteers. We'll start with one. If someone is working on a service system, I want to understand what it is about that service system, and we're going to discuss it, and I'll write this up as we go along. So what I've done is I've created a document here. And I've actually put the description in, and we'll kind of step through it. So has anyone worked on a thesis already on a service system they want to talk about?
Resourcing tool. We need resources for projects as a personnel.
Okay. Resourcing tool. So I'm trying to think about what the service system is because I'm not so focused on a tool. So we go back to the idea of what is the service system associated with that? Would it be like a resourcing service?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to generalize that. So it's a resourcing service that could be either a human being or a machine?
Yes.
Okay, good. Okay, let's do that. Let's do a resourcing system. Okay, pattern one, resourcing system. Service system, just to be clear. Okay, so if you're going to design a resourcing system, who's it for? What stakeholder, what do they want? What do they not have today? Why would they want a resourcing system?
Process manager needs a specialist for a tool to complete the task.
Where can I find a specialist to complete some tasks? Okay. What other voices would be there? Besides the project manager, who else?
Then for the group manager, where can I find the specialist? Do I have the skills to fill that need for the project manager?
Okay, for sorry, for the which role?
For the group manager who has the specialist.
Approved manager? The
group.
Oh, group manager. Manager. Do I have the specialist to fill the role? Okay. Any others, do you think?
Then probably the specialist will have the skills to complete the task.
The specialist. Is that okay? Do I have the skills? But I'm actually probably they're more interested in maybe what opportunities are available that I could fit my skills into. How about that?
Yeah.
What opportunities are available to use my skills? Good. Okay. So I like that. So we have three roles. And the reason this is interesting as we're working through this is that it's important to ask the who question. And this is the problem I had when I was looking at the architecture work. And if you go, and I do encourage you to go to the library or stop by and just pick up a pattern language book and you start looking at it. There's no people, there's no who in the book. When you design a building, who is it for? When you design a town square, who is it for? When you design a balcony, who is it for? So a service system always has a who associated with it, and we often forget that we serve people. The other side is that if you start doing this, the interesting part should be deciding who you are not going to serve. Because if you're building a service system, you need to actually serve those people at a high level, and so you may decide that we're not going to serve these other ones because they're very infrequent, or their demands are too high, or we can't afford it. But as a system, this is pretty well specified. Okay, so affording values, how and what. So now we get into what sort of features does it have, and I'm saying objects or events that enable modes of practice. It's a little complicated, but let me try to get through this. So the product manager, what sort of things the product manager do with the system, and why would they do it?
Well, as of now, they don't have the names of the people who will complete the task. So they need the system to get the name of the specialist from the group manager.
Okay, so they get the names of the specialists. And why do they want the names of the specialists?
Because they have a task to delegate to them.
Okay, I'm going to dig in this a little bit more because this is actually in my dissertation, it's written up but not in the papers. There's a technique from agile development called business-driven development. And what they do is that they ask you for a feature and then they ask you for the value. And the reason they ask you for the value is it helps prioritize which one of these features you would work on. So if he doesn't get the names of the specialist, then what's going to happen?
He cannot deliver the project to his customer.
Okay. So that the project can be delivered to the customer. Okay, so that's good. So the reason that we do this is that when you actually now start working with that, okay, so let's do another one. What does a group manager, what feature, what does he want to do with the system and why does he want to do it?
He has the specialist, and if he cannot give them tasks, then they are idling on the office. To gain the revenue, to meet the revenue targets given by company.
Okay. To meet the revenue targets. Good. And for the specialists, why don't we do one for them too? So what do they want out of it?
They have also the same revenue targets, so to achieve the level of invoiced hours.
Okay, so they have to be assigned. So let's do it being assigned to a project so that they can reach individual revenue targets.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's good. So what we've got now is a service system with multiple people that want different things out of the system. So we have the who and the what, three who's and what's here, and the how and the why. We've kind of got that. So we've got the affordance, in effect, because it affords you to do these things, getting the name. And so I know English isn't the first language for everyone. I'm doing this in a very strange way for English, because I'm using getting, giving, being, right? I'd say for this, you know, so I'm using the language in a very specific way. And it's taking me a while to get used to writing it that way. And the reason that I'm doing this is that there is interaction in the service. So a service doesn't really exist unless it's between two people. And so you always have kind of, you know, think about a customer and a receiver, or a sender and a receiver, you know, this sort of thing. There's two people involved. Or there's a person and a machine involved. That's the way the affordant thinks about it. So when I say getting the names of the specialists, you could actually now say, well, I can get the names from a human being, or I can get the names from a machine, right? Or an artificial intelligence, or different ways of doing it. Giving tasks to a specialist, it could be an algorithm that does this, as opposed to being in a spreadsheet. Being assigned, again, that sort of thing. So that's why it's being structured this way. So next is the spatiotemporal frames. Okay, now this is a bit tricky, and this is a context for, we have the service. Why would they use this service? So, my assumption is that this, and this is true in most services, you can always get it done. You can always do it yourself, but there's always a service alternative. So I can always cook at home by myself. Why would I go to a restaurant, right? I can always drive a car by myself. Why would I take a train? So there's a spatiotemporal frame, which is, we're now talking about a resourcing service system. Why is it that they, if it's like, there's two people in the company, then you're not going to need one, right? If two people talk to each other, they kind of do mutual adjustment, you don't need a big system. So there's a where and a when associated with this system. So does a company have to be a certain size? Or they have to be overwhelmed? Do they have to be too busy? What do you think?
I think the company is big enough that the project manager don't know the specialist, and they couldn't go looking for them in the time frame that the project needs to be completed.
And what's the second one, the projects?
Yeah, the project. If the manager has to go, if the project manager has to go looking for those without using this tool, then he wouldn't meet the deadlines because he has to go through the phone book and start calling people individual basis.
Deadlines would be missed if resources not found. Okay. So the idea behind this where and the when, this is part of, you could call it like needs assessment. Like, so people come in and say, oh, I'm going to provide this service. So my first question is, okay, I understand you're going to provide this service. Let's talk about actually the individual users that would actually use it. And we have three here.
And what will happen as you're working through designing or architecting the system is, are you satisfying them all? Are you satisfying one more than the other? And so you build your basic service. And then on top of that, you now go, well, who's got a more urgent need? You might have a different issue or different ways you're working on. On the affording values, these are the basic sorts of features that you end up putting into it. And the spatiotemporal frames are one way to think about using it. So this is quite important because now we're talking about context. And there are contexts, so if the company's not large enough, so if you have this service and you're going in and say, I have this great service for you, and you say, sorry, we don't need it. We're not big enough. There's no point, right? Or deadlines and missing resources aren't found. Well, we have lots. If you have so many resources that and they're not used and there's no deadlines, then it's like, okay, no problem. Well, I don't need this tool either. I have a volunteer army. I'm a not-for-profit company, and we work on volunteers. Oh, sorry, this is not for you.
Containing systems. So I talked to you about the pacing layers, and what I'm trying to find now is kind of what the shape and the site and the structure are all about. So we have this resourcing system. There's usually bigger and slower systems that are in play already. So I think that, let me try to fill this in, because a resourcing system in this case is for short-term projects. The other alternative would probably be employment, like long-term employment contracts, right? So as opposed to be assigned to a project, then you'd be like long-term company. So for a project staffing person, I'll say for example, can I get where do I go? No, I don't do this. No, this is tough. Okay, so if they don't, let's say there's no deadline and they were looking for skills and they're not so hard to find, where would you go? Would you go like to an employment office or?
Put an app in some kind of.
Ah, great, that's good, that's good. How do I find out about what skills are available? And I'll put in here newspaper ads. That's pretty good as an example. Good. And then in a containing system.
Is the needs also important here? Now, why is it available and why is needed?
Well, what I'm thinking about, and I'll explain a little bit more when I do the systems thinking part of the lecture, but what I'm trying to get into here is, if this system doesn't exist, what's the bigger system? So when I was talking about mobile phones versus telephones, the wired telephone system is actually the bigger system. They don't run everything off wireless. So there is a containing system of that. Now you kind of go down inside that system. So if you have a mobile phone, then you can have individual operators and what service they're going to provide. So if you had a resource service system, what is inside that resource system that makes it work? What are the parts? Like how does someone actually work inside of that system? So what can you do actually once you've got it done?
There is a knowledge base for the specialist.
Ah, good. For the specialist, what is the knowledge base of what? What sort of knowledge?
The skills of the specialists and the needs of the project manager.
Okay. Okay, good.
Can I ask?
Sure.
So, you've already actually somewhat discussed this, but I just wanted to ask, make sure that I understood it correctly. So when do you sort of start to ask, or when do you ask whether this is the real issue that you want to solve? For example, now we're trying to solve the problem that we can't find specialists, or we want to find specialists. But what if the problem is not that we don't have a resourcing service system, but that the people are in separate buildings and they just need to meet each other, and instead of building a resourcing service system, we bring them together for a lunch and then they find each other better.
Okay.
So when do you sort of go behind to look at the value behind the what?
Okay, so having people get together for lunch is an affordance. It is a different way of approaching the same issue. So as a project manager, where can I find a specialist to be some task? Schedule a lunch, right? As opposed to using this affordance of getting all the names and everything, put everyone all together in a room. So when I say affordance, it doesn't mean you couldn't do both, right? And I think that's where you decide. And so again, if I go back to software development where I'm most comfortable, you end up building a software product and you end up with the idea of minimal viable product, right? What does I need to put in to get this product to launch? And then you start adding features on. You add more affordances as you go along. And then you get to the point where you don't add more affordances because it doesn't make sense because you're duplicating other functions or you find different ways of doing it. Other questions about this? You kind of getting the idea? I'm not that far ahead of you. So yeah, I'm just about as uncomfortable. I'm about 2 months ahead of you because I've been writing these things since August. And when I started writing this, I had to write this structure and write this structure, so they're both changing at the same time. So now this part is stabilized, pretty stabilized. Does someone else have another service system they want to try?
So one thing about this, so when this system is being worked on,
yeah,
we go iteration for this affordance and try to figure out what's the best affording for this system to work, and then go straight back on the lower parts. And
okay, so the question I think you're asking is this one pattern or multiple patterns? And that's why it's a pattern language. And so that you start getting into the sorts of discussions about how you partition up the space. So when you talk about town square, is that part of the streetscape or is that just part of the town square? Because you're gonna say we're just gonna organize the streets. So that part you end up having to iterate on. And that's when it's helpful actually to go look at the pattern language book and you kind of get the idea, oh, they did this. They could have combined these things, but they put them together, put them apart. A lot of the pattern language work and the way that the people in software development design patterns have been doing it is they talk about something you would notice. So when I talk about town square or I talk about balcony, a balcony is something you notice, but if it's a really small balcony, maybe you don't notice it, it's not worth writing about. So you want to write about things that matter. It could be a few patterns and then you link them together, or it could be one big pattern. All of that, I think you have to work through. And the idea about doing this is that eventually what we'd like to be able to do is have service system patterns across all systems. And so you ask the question, well, what's the difference between teaching at a university and working in a bank? Are they the same? Are they different? Can we learn from this service system and use it in this other service system? So a lot of this is exploratory at this point.
How about the transportation system?
Okay, transportation system. What sort of transportation system? Or do you want to do the whole thing?
I'm thinking mobility as a service.
Okay, I thought you might do that. Mobility as a service. When it's funny how when you do a thesis, it drives you a particular direction. Oh, okay. Sorry, before we move on, the last one, we need to name the pattern. Okay, so this is when it starts getting a little tricky, because what is it that this pattern actually does? So this is when we get into like minding children, and that was my pattern. Town square is a physical pattern. And this is when you start getting a little creative, because when you ideally, and this is why it takes a while to write these, when you'd say something, if people go, yeah, I know what that means. So this could be, is this like a scheduling? a scheduling pattern, or is it a
resourcing?
Well, yeah, it's kind of big for resourcing. It's
probably the meeting the needs of the projects, the skills, though in a timely manner.
Actually, let me suggest maybe it's a matchmaking pattern.
Yeah.
Matchmaking? That's good. Let's call it that. Okay, we'll call this one the matchmaking practice. Matchmaking. Okay, good. So people can understand matchmaking now. And it's like, you have all these details, and after you got the name, now it's like, oh, okay, now I'll go work on it. Okay. Okay, so, well, building the service, okay. Who's a stakeholder and what do they want out of the system?
A family.
For a family, okay.
Alternatively, you would have the family head there as one stakeholder and then the children, because there's different needs, I'm thinking.
Okay, so a family head. And for a child, okay. What's the issue for the family head?
Commuting, so getting from home to work.
Okay. Family head. How do I get from home to work? And for the child.
How do I get to kindergarten? And then I would also add a third need. For the whole family, how do we get to cabin?
Okay. Okay, so what sort of affordances do they get in the service, in mobility as a service? What can they do with the system?
Getting to their destination
in the timeline, in the frame of time that they have.
Yeah. If anyone else has done research on mobility as a service, you can chip in.
Okay, so, and why? What value does that provide?
So they can get access to resources at the destination. Is that too abstract?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, this is hard. Like now we're getting really down to hard. And actually, I'll challenge you even harder, which is, why is it that mobility as a service provides this affordance that just reading the bus schedule doesn't?
It's owning a car is expensive and it binds your resources, many of them.
Okay, not owning a car. Okay, so we may have to go back and rephrase the issues then, because that's really not what it is. Okay, you want to take a...
Do you need to own an asset?
Okay, so let's do so owning a vehicle is not required. Let's try that. Okay.
The sort of underlying issue is that you want these different things to get done with one system, but without necessarily owning a car.
Okay.
So that's why I named three different kinds of...
It's actually about how efficiently are you using those vehicles that you are using. That's pretty much the bottom of the question.
Yeah.
If you own a car, you only use 10% of it. If you buy it as a service, you then use the whole time, you then are buying it.
Okay. But let's make it then the voice on the issue. Is the actual issue then a cost issue? Is that the issue?
It is, yes.
Okay, so so let's change this. Not from how do I get to work. Oh, so
How do I get to work with transportation? This is really bad. Transportation method that I can afford.
It's not only a cost issue though, it's also a convenience issue, because you could always walk or take a bus, but not many people do that because it's not convenient.
Or also it can be a seasonal issue that I simply do not want to own a car.
And that's
a taxi, I can use my money, which could be sort of inserted into that car. I can use them to ride a Uber or taxi or public transportation or whatever I want.
Yeah, but because behind all that is that you need to invest your time also to upkeep that car. Mm-hmm. It binds your resources, also your intellectual resources. You need to call for maintenance, you need to understand what is wrong. So you want to outsource all those problems.
You also need space for that car.
There are multiple problems.
It's also a timing problem, because if you have a car, you can go whenever you want. But if you don't, you need something else that can deliver
you.
Okay, hold on.
So what's happening now is, and the questions I'm running through my head about this, because you actually would have to, in effect, the person has to have the issue. And so there are people who will be attracted to mobility as a service and people who are not attracted to mobility as a service. Because people use Uber, right? And so they would say, well, why do I need all this other stuff? Like, when I just use Uber all the time? Or are you saying that Uber, like, I assume that Uber is part of mobility as a service, but not the whole thing?
Well, you actually touch on an important point, because mobility as a service is pushed from the top. It's coming from legislation and from entrepreneurs, and
yeah.
They're only now testing whether people actually want it. So it's an interesting thing.
Okay. So let's see if we could actually craft this then. So for the family head, is it about affordability and convenience? Is that what it is?
And for the last voice, getting to the cabin, that is probably the issue, is that you can't go. With taxi, it costs an arm. If you take a bus, it probably don't take you the whole way. You have to try to find, because the cabins are in the forest and the buses don't go there. So how do I get to places where the conventional services at the moment don't, to get to the airport? So.
Yeah, it's easy to get to work. Everything is built for commuting, at least here, so that's not the problem. It's after work, in the evening.
If I want to go to Ikea, for example, then the bus is not
there. Yeah, if you need to go at 11 o'clock and so on, in the evening, then there's no, you know, the frequency of those lines is too big for that.
Okay. And I want to think, is mobility as a service really targeted at children or not?
Probably not. I would actually, this is already so complicated that I would actually take that.
Okay. Okay, so.
It is of course for the child as well, but it's more that the family that knows how my children are in the place where they need to be.
So is the idea of the, that the parent would order it for the child?
If the child needs to be on a basketball team or somewhere else, go to the kindergarten when their parents are already at work, or getting from school to home.
Transported to an event when I'm not there. How about that? Close enough for now. Okay. So the affording value, getting to their destination, the frame of time that they have, that's not what the service does, does it? Does it guarantee that you're going to get there, or what does the mobility of the service provide you that you don't get otherwise?
There's two kinds of use. One is that you get information about, getting information about means of transportation, so you can make a more, you can make a better choice.
A better choice in terms of what?
Between different means.
Between them.
The biggest issue would be for the consumer is that owning the car, maintaining it, and then also buying the commuting tickets and everything is too expensive. So can things be done in a cheaper way?
Okay.
The price of mobility is,
that has to be lowered.
Okay.
You could add that it has a lot to do with capacity utilization. If you look at the normal vehicle, it's only being used less than 5% of the time. 95% it just stays on the street and does absolutely nothing, whereas this kind of mobility as a service would have a much higher utilization rate and thereby
so it's right. It's the integration of resources. It's the integration of resources.
Yeah.
And also the saving of time. I mean, if you drive a car, you can't do anything else. The time is wasted in commuting. Whereas if you sit in a bus or a train, you can actually read something or do some work. Maybe that would be possible. In a cab, you can also at least read your news or emails or something. And in a way, you save time.
Okay. Can I take off this portion?
Do you want to put the voices of issues? Do you want to put it for the regulator? Or is there are these willingness to save the environment and so on.
Okay.
That's
yes.
Issue.
Okay. So now again, we're getting into whether it's one pattern or multiple patterns. But just hold on to that idea. We'll come back in a minute. So we have enough affording values. When and where are mobility as a service valid? Like when do we care about it? Like
when there's different people in the family who need to get to different places. So you can't use your car necessarily.
When the traditional public transportation doesn't fit to your time frame.
Yeah, that's important, the time frame. Right? Mm-hmm.
Or you just simply don't want to use public transportation. If you think that the market is only for poor people, you can take your bicycle.
Electric
bicycle. After you can't really use the vehicle, or unless you are in the car.
Okay. Okay, so in the containing system, does this assume that all of the all the individual services already exist? So you already have to have public transportation, you already have to have like Uber, you already have to have bicycles, is that the context? Otherwise, if you don't have any of those, then there's no point doing mobility as a service, right? Okay. So so transportation the containing system, who's this for? We have for someone. okay, so we're asking the...
Could there be that for the family there is already existing transportation models?
Okay.
There are many models, and this is like combining the existing ones to a service that you pay per use.
Existing models of transportation be combined for as pay per use. Okay. And the contained system, once they actually get mobility as a service, then what sort of issues do they have with that one? So if there were, the sort of question you'd ask here is, if there are multiple mobile as a service operators, what would differentiate people so they start switching from one to the other? So.
Payment schemes, pricing.
Which service provider gives the best payment schemes, or what?
Yeah, the comfortability, how close it comes to you, doesn't take you there exactly where you go.
Okay.
You need to walk. How much?
Okay. So
maybe in the system you can have also things like other services, like information services. Once you don't have to be on the wheel or
okay. For a mass user. What other services could be available while I'm not at the wheel?
Sort of stuff.
Video games.
This would definitely revolution for the whole vehicle concept, because it's
yeah.
Really made for driving performance.
Yeah.
You want it to accelerate, you want it to be in your hands, you want to feel the car. You want to work there with your laptop, then it has to go slow and calmly, and so it then will disrupt the whole vehicle or change the perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want the bus you're traveling in to accelerate in 5 seconds from 0 to 100.
Ah.
Because there's tons of work for the vehicle then.
Okay, so what's the name of this pattern?
Switch the pattern to mobility as a service, give that something else and give the label name.
No, this is the hard part about it, is that you're trying to describe, because this is kind of the basics, and so how is mobility as a service described to people that really don't know what it is? Like, what is it that this is doing? Is this a is this like an information search type of thing? Is this a convenience thing? Like, what is it that?
Okay, it's a good alternative to own a car to get to a different places with some quite kind of really easy user interface, which can provide you an alternative to get there in the most convenient way.
A lot of transportation on demand. Relocation on demand. Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Can you relocate your house with that?
Relocating on demand.
You get a huge crater.
Your house is small enough.
Okay. I think that's a good start. I think you're kind of getting the feel for it, And it actually may be better to do this in groups and not individuals, so writing patterns, I can see why it actually is quite helpful, because I've sat for quite a few weeks writing these things, and it does help to have more people doing it, they can just kind of discuss it. The part that we haven't worked out really well yet, and that would come with experience, is this one pattern or multiple patterns? Do you want to break it down? Can we learn something from another system? And that's where you get into the idea of the larger pattern catalog.